Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. And now, here's your host, John Hanson, with Greg Cosell.
Welcome to the FantasyGuru.com podcast. This is not John Hanson, but rather this is Joe Dolan, managing editor of the aforementioned website, filling in for John Hanson today. You can follow me on Twitter at FG_Dolan, and you can follow the site at Fantasy Guru Site. Follow them on Twitter. Get all your latest updates. I'm constantly tweeting nowadays, as is the site, about everything that's going on in fantasy football. In just a few moments, we'll welcome in the reason you're all here, Greg Cosell of NFL Films. But first, a reminder that the preseason is heating up, and obviously it's the most important time of the fantasy season. So just go to fantasyguru.com, check it out. Subscribe for a year for under $30. We haven't changed our subscription price in 20 years. Seriously. Yesterday alone, we posted over 10 articles, updated projections, we updated our PDF cheat sheets, and more. For all that stuff and what you get with the subscription, just go to fantasyguru.com, check out the information, check out everything you get, apps, tools, mobile apps, everything. It's really awesome. We're taking it to the next level this year. And now it's my pleasure to welcome in the reason everybody's here, Mr. Greg Cosell, senior producer of the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN, and a man who watches more film than Richard Roper. You can follow him on Twitter at Greg Cosell. Greg, how are you today?
Joe, what's happening? I guess it's a slow Friday if everybody's here for it. Listen to me, but hey, we'll make the best of it.
Greg, I'm absolutely certain there are going to be people listening to this podcast who will drop everything they're doing just to listen to you. And I'm not exaggerating. Well,
that's what I'm doing, dropping everything I'm doing.
Well, I'm flattered in that instance. Greg, let's just get started. We're mere days away from the Hall of Fame game, the official start to the NFL preseason. This is really our last chance to kind of wrap up all the odds and ends from training camp, early camp news, before we have actual action to watch. Are you ready to go?
Sure. Let's just hope we do better than Alden Smith.
Oh boy. We'll get to that at the end of the podcast. Literally, I have San Francisco tabbed as my last team to talk about, because I really don't want to talk about them. But we'll start in the AFC this time around, Greg, and we'll start with the Buffalo Bills. Greg, one thing that a lot of people in the fantasy community are concerned about is LeSean McCoy, and for the second season in a row, he has preseason toe issues, and it's been turf toe in the past, and that can be a really nasty injury. It's something that can really affect a guy. It's actually ended careers in the past. Last year when watching LeSean McCoy in Philadelphia, Greg, did you notice him on tape slowing down, maybe a little less elusive, than he'd been in the past?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because he had a stretch where he clearly did not look like the same runner. And then as the season progressed, there were moments where he looked good. And I can't remember every run, obviously, but I don't seem to recall those runs with anywhere near the same frequency where he just sort of faked guys out of their shoes, you know, where the kind of McCoy runs where you were used to seeing over the previous 3, 4, 5 years, you know, because he's been a feature back even, you know, when Andy Reid was there. It wasn't just under Chip Kelly. So, you know, it's hard to say if that was a function of an injury or not, but you didn't see, for the most part, the same kind of moves that you'd seen in previous years.
And behind an offensive line in Buffalo, you assume he's going almost to a different scheme. That could be another concern. A lot of people in the fantasy community are fading LeSean McCoy this year. They really don't want him, despite the fact that he's in line for a lot of carries. And with this toe injury lingering, with the touches that have accumulated on his body, I can understand why people aren't really targeting LeSean McCoy. And Greg, one last thing before we move on. As a receiver last year, he was completely ineffective. And this is a guy who's been a really good receiver in the past. And I don't think it was just Darren Sproles, because this is a guy who went from 10 yards a catch to just like 5 yards a catch. And that was a big reason his fantasy production was down.
You know, and the other issue too is, you know, they signed Jerome Felton, who's a really good blocking fullback, but McCoy has not spent a lot of time with a fullback. And my guess is you don't sign Jerome Felton to play him 5 snaps a game. So I think there'll be a little bit of an adjustment period there as well.
Greg, obviously with the Bills, the big story in camp is the quarterback competition. If you follow any of the beat writers on Twitter, all of them insinuating that there really isn't a clear winner right now, and that's not good news for the Bills. But The guy who's been talked about the most, maybe the most intriguing name here, is Tyrod Taylor, who's been in the league for a few years as a backup, most notably with Baltimore. Greg, do you remember Tyrod Taylor when he was coming out of college? Is there anything you could tell the people about his skill set that might make him an intriguing player in the NFL?
Well, you know, I think now you're getting into Rex Ryan's philosophy, and I think a lot of this stems from his dad's philosophy as well, because I think Rex sees his team, and this is the way I think he sees the game. You play great defense, and there may not be a better pure defensive coach in the league than Rex. You play great shutdown defense. You run the ball, and in his mind, all your quarterback has to do is make a few plays. And if those plays come running the ball, that's fine too, in his mind. I don't personally think that's the right approach, but hey, I'm not the one making the decision. You know, Tyrod Taylor, and I've talked to people about Tyrod Taylor, and the reviews I've gotten haven't been positive. So again, it might come down to Rex having a belief that, hey, if the kid can make three plays, we can win games because of the rest of our team.
Switching over to the Miami Dolphins, Greg, Ryan Tannehill, we like him a lot. We've talked often about how he is progressing in his career like you used to expect a quarterback to progress. He would get gradually better every year. He just wasn't a star immediately. However, one area where he hasn't gotten better is throwing that deep ball. Now, rave reviews in camp. Ryan Tannehill's hitting the ball deep. He's throwing deep to Jarvis Landry, of all people, and he's on the money. Do you take any credence in this information whatsoever, or is it completely different than when bodies are flying around them?
Well, it's different, but you certainly want to see improvement at each step. So, it's certainly a positive that he's throwing the deep ball better. His issue with the deep ball didn't have anything to do with arm or arm strength. He just didn't seem to have a great feel for it. But they're an interesting offense. This is a potentially very, very good offense. I guess much will depend on if they get anything at all out of Devontae Parker, who's now, I guess, on the PUP list, and who knows when he's back and what he can do as a rookie. But this is an interesting offense. They've got weapons. They've got some offensive linemen there who are young, who they're expecting to, good things from. But I think offensively, they'll be a pretty good team.
When the Dolphins drafted Jay Ajayi, who was a favorite of DraftKings, Greg, prior to the draft, I liked him a lot. You liked him even more than I did. But he's gotten off to a slow start, apparently. Armando Salguero, who covers the team, has said, it looks pretty clear that the number two job behind Lamar Miller is Damian Williams is to lose. And I thought that was particularly interesting because Williams is one of those measurable freaks. He's big. He has really explosive traits. Do you remember him on tape? What kind of things can he offer as a number two behind Lamar Miller?
Yeah, he's a big kid. He's got downhill speed. I wouldn't call him shifty, but I don't know. I don't think Lamar Miller is overly shifty either. He's a good receiver. I think he fits their second back approach because of his ability to catch the ball. And he played down the stretch last year, and I thought he played pretty well.
So, yeah, Jay Ajayi is going to be somebody we're going to really have to watch in the preseason. I think a big concern with Ajayi coming out was he's going to have short-term value, but he might not have long-term value because of the injuries. This is something that really puts a damper on that. So he's going to be a player I'm really interested to watch because I think most people assumed that they were going to take touches from Lamar Miller. There's just a feeling I get that there is something that the Dolphins do not like about Miller. He didn't have 20 carries a single time in a game last year, and despite his effective play, they've been looking to add options to that backfield, but it's shaping up really well for Lamar Miller, at least to be the early down back right now in this offense.
Yeah, and if they run a good amount of sort of the Chip Kelly offense with Bill Lazor, which they did last year, I think Miller fits that, Joe, because Miller's not shifty. I don't think he's a zone runner, an outside zone runner. I think he's that downhill zone runner, which is what they would do. He's explosive downhill, and that's what he is. He's not a whole lot more than that. You know, he did average over 5 yards a carry last year. Now, I don't think he's a true foundation back. You're not going to have him carry 320 times. He's not that guy.
The New England Patriots, Greg, obviously there's a big story in the news about Tom Brady and some footballs. I personally am sick and tired of hearing about it, so we're not going to talk about that. We're going to have plenty of time to evaluate Jimmy Garoppolo over the next 4 weeks before the NFL season gets going. So I wanted to ask a question about a player who's kind of flying under the radar. He's absolutely a post-hype guy at this stage. Aaron Dobson's been getting some rave reviews early in camp, and even Bill Belichick has singled him out and said, there's a guy where I've seen clear improvement, and I think your ears perk up when you hear Belichick say something like that about a guy. What could Aaron Dobson at his best give this team that it's lacked in the past?
Well, he would give them some speed, first of all. He's a size speed guy. He's a big kid who can run, and they don't really have that guy because Brandon LaFell is a very nice receiver, but he can't run like that. I think when Dobson came out of Marshall, everybody believed that he had a chance to be a vertical wide receiver. And he hasn't, first of all, he hasn't been on the field very much, number one, and that's a real problem. But if he's healthy and if he's clearly improved, you're dealing with a 6'2", 210-pound kid with excellent speed. And, you know, every team would like that kind of receiver. So they've been waiting for Dobson, and if he's truly improved, I think he adds a lot. And by the way, you know, the book's still out. We don't know what's going to happen with Tom Brady. You know, I almost felt from day one when this happened that he would be playing week one, and I guess we still don't know the answer to that.
And it's potential. But that's why I'm going to say let's wait a little bit. Let's wait till we have preseason action to really dive in on Jimmy Garoppolo. Don't want to dedicate resources there if we're really not going to have to use them. And we're going to see plenty of them in the preseason, whether Brady's suspended or not. So we're going to be able to look at him, see how he's progressed after 1 year in the system. Switching over to the Jets, Greg, you and John Hansen have talked about this quite a bit on the podcast. This is a potentially very interesting offense, but one position that fantasy players are staying really far away from so far in drafts has been the backfield. And I think people see really similar backs back there. They see Chris Ivory, Zach Stacy, and Stephen Ridley, and they view them all as more sort of downhill type of runners. Yep. However, the Jets have been insisting this offseason that Chris Ivory is going to get the first crack at a three-down role. Todd Bowles has said Ivory just needs to improve his receiving. He's kind of pointed out and said he needs to concentrate a little bit better. Has there been anything in Ivory's skill set that you've seen that would suggest he can't become a three-down guy? Because I'm intrigued now based on what Bowles is saying, because Ivory is very cheap in fantasy. You can get this guy eighth, ninth round as a third or fourth running back, and there's some upside there based on the way he's played in the past.
Yeah, he's never been able to play really a full season, but as a runner, he's a powerful kid. He's got a little bit of lateral agility to him. Chris Ivory's a good back as a runner. The receiving part, we'll have to wait and see. You know, they've been playing Bilal Powell in that role the last number of years. So obviously, in their mind, they're looking for an upgrade from Powell to play that sort of third down or sub-package role, which I'm not sure if Ridley would be that guy or Zach Stacy. So I think they're looking to Ivory to be that guy.
Not a ton going on with the Baltimore Ravens, Greg. One interesting point, I guess, at this stage, Marlon Brown and Breshad Perriman are both injured. Both of them have missed some practice time in training camp. So they're listing Kamar Aiken as a starter alongside Steve Smith. I'm just curious if you've seen Kamar Aiken.
Yeah, he played last year.
What kind of skills he brings to the table.
Yeah, he's a pretty good-sized kid. I thought when he played last year, he played pretty well. You know, the question for – and look, they don't want him to be the starter, obviously. That's why they drafted Perriman. You know, I thought Marlon Brown, quite honestly, for his size and his movement, did a nice job for them when he played. And I think they're expecting more from him, assuming the injuries to Perriman and Brown aren't serious. And I don't think either one is viewed as such. I think Aiken becomes a real nice kind of fourth receiver, situational receiver, and that's what he is. And if he has to, you know, again, we're dealing, you know, very early in training camp, as you know, Joe, so it's hard to know. Mm-hmm. But I think if all plays out the way they want it to play out, you're going to see Perriman starting opposite Steve Smith. You'll see a lot of Marlon Brown as number three. And you'll see a guy like Aiken, just like you'll see a guy like Campanaro, used in specific situations, specific personnel packages, and specific formations.
And once again, this is a guy who, because it's the Ravens and they haven't really been a great fantasy team or a big offensive production team, this is a guy who's free. If you're doing late best ball drafts, if you're in a deep league, Kamar Aiken is free. He's being listed as a starter. And a guy with size, Joe Flacco, could indeed look for him in the red zone. Greg, we were talking about Aaron Dobson. with the New England Patriots. And this day and age in fantasy, with the market so saturated and information just exploding into your face, one of, I think, the very few under-the-radar assets you can get in fantasy is kind of these post-hype sleepers, these guys who people were all over a couple years ago and are now sick and tired of because they didn't produce or they got hurt or things like that. And that leads me to my Cincinnati Bengals question. A guy I am targeting all over is Tyler Eifert. And it's because he's free. And I look at this offense with the Bengals, and I don't see a clear number two target behind A.J. Green. In Eifert, before he got hurt last year, he played 8 offensive snaps and caught 3 passes for 37 yards. I mean, it seemed to show me that Hugh Jackson had big plans for Tyler Eifert, and I think it is possible. I'm not saying likely, but I think it's possible that Tyler Eifert is the number two target in this offense, and that makes him very appealing to me as essentially a free fantasy pick.
You could be right, because I think this is a team that's going to line up with 2 tight ends often. They also drafted the rookie from Rutgers, Tyler Kroft, who's kind of reminded me a little of Zach Ertz in his movement. And I think Eifert is one of those tight ends, Joe, that has a chance to be pretty multidimensional, a good receiver, a good blocker. And you're right, he could easily be a number two target here because, you know, who is number two? I think Sanu is a really nice player, but he's probably best suited to be a 3. And Marvin Jones, still, from what you read, can't really get on the field yet due to injury.
It makes it just a fascinating team. I think the Bengals are a really good team, but they do have a lack of depth behind A.J. Green, and I think that's something they're going to want to solve early in the year. Greg, not a ton going on with the Cleveland Browns. I know they've been mixing Johnny Manziel in with the ones. We're going to have plenty of time to talk about him in the preseason.
I think he's going to play this year, though. I think he's going to end up playing this year. I mean, again, it's not a knock on Josh McCown, but based on track record, do you think Josh McCown's going to start 16 games?
Absolutely not. And also, because frankly, I think this team's going to stink, you're not starting Josh McCown for 16 games if you're sitting at 3-9 after 12. And probably
no, and again,
even before that.
Look, they were 7-9 last year, which I think was probably a surprise to a lot of people. I think their defense will be pretty good. And then we'll find out if they can run the ball with any consistency. But more than likely, they're not a team that's going to be 10-6. So, you know, at some point, whether it's due to Josh McCown not playing well, which he didn't last year, getting injured, or just the record, as you suggest, we're going to see Johnny Manziel. He was their first-round draft choice. You can say what you want, but he was a first-round draft choice.
They're gonna need to know what they can get out of him, if anything, and they're going to be bad. So, yeah, I totally expect Manziel to play at some point. Greg, I'm going to ask you to do something a little off-kilter here. I'm going to ask you to evaluate out of position. Is there anything in Terrell Pryor's skill set that you saw on tape as a quarterback that would make you think there's a potential for him to successfully transition to wide receiver?
Well, he's big and he can run, and so therefore people think he can be a wide receiver. My guess is that's not going to happen. So, yeah, I don't think that that's really a realistic possibility, to be honest with you. It's very hard to change positions like that. And just being big and being able to run a little bit. Now, does that mean you couldn't put him in a red zone, let's say, and I guess this is where fantasy comes in, and just throw it up to him? I guess that's possible, but he's not going to catch 60 balls, Joe. I mean, he's not going to be a regular receiver and play meaningful snaps on a weekly basis. That, you know, it would almost be the way people talk about Tim Tebow playing quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, there'd be a specific situation or two when he might have an impact. That would be what Pryor's situation will be. He's not going to be a full-time wideout.
Pittsburgh Steelers, Greg, a lot of hype this offseason for Martavis Bryant, but right now he's out with an elbow infection. However, the reports suggest he's gained 15 to 20 pounds of muscle. He was a skinny kid, not small, but skinny. On film, what did you notice that he needed to get better at to really take the next step as an NFL receiver? And I know he made big plays last year, but this is a guy who really only caught about 25 passes. So there's still a long way to go for Martavis Bryant.
By the way, did you gain 15 pounds of muscle this offseason, Joe?
I gained 15 pounds this offseason, Craig. I doubt his muscle, though.
You know, I think Martavis Bryant, the big thing you're looking for with him is to become a little more complete. He was kind of a vertical guy. And when I mean vertical guy, I don't just mean running deep routes, which of course he did very, very well because he's very big and can run. But he was more of that straight line kind of guy, you know, running slants, running routes where you didn't really have to show any lateral quickness. And I think that that's what you're working with him on. You know, he's got length, obviously. If he truly gained 15 pounds of muscle, then he's probably up to about 220, 225, and now you're getting into him being a more physical receiver, a guy who can make contested catches. He wasn't really a contested catch guy. He was a big, fluid athlete. So if you add that to his repertoire, I mean, this is a team offensively, and I'm sure you guys have been all over this, Joe, so I'm not saying anything new, but this team offensively with Le'Veon Bell, when he gets back, they've got a ton of weapons and a pretty good old line. I think they view themselves as a team that can score close to 30 points every week.
And if Martavis Bryant is making plays in the preseason, and this is a comment for the fantasy players, prepare for him to shoot up draft boards. It's already happening. I think people, Greg, in general, are buying into the Steeler offense, and they're also combining that with the fact that we don't expect this defense to be very good. I know they just traded for Brandon Boykin. That's a nice step in the positive, but I still don't think it's going to be a defense that's going to prevent teams from scoring a whole lot.
And you may be right, but what they're going to do is they're going to sort of take a page from the Indianapolis Colts back in, you know, sort of the Tony Dungy era when Manning was in his prime with the Colts, and they're going to end up playing a lot more cover two, and they're going to play to their offense, the idea that they can score points and their defense will be much more of a softer bend but don't break, just like the Colts played back in those days. And I think that's now going to be their team profile. They're not going to play as much of cover three. They're not going to, I think they'll morph into more of a 4-3 front over time, and they're going to play cover two. That's what they're going to do.
Big news, Greg, so far of training camp, Arian Foster. He had surgery today, that's Friday, August 7th, to repair his torn groin. It was torn away from the bone. While he might be back at some point, maybe sooner than people anticipated, he's clearly going to miss quite some time, and that is a huge loss. I can't imagine a running back in the NFL, aside from maybe Le'Veon Bell last year in Pittsburgh, but they have more weapons now to make up for that. I can't imagine there's a running back in the NFL more important to his team than Arian Foster. This is a huge loss for the Texans, but for fantasy, and as Bill O'Brien said, it's next man up. Of those backs that they have, Greg, who you've seen on film, who do you think's the best fit to replace Arian Foster in that Texan offense?
Well, to me, it'll be Blue or Polk, because they're inside guys. You know, this is a team, because of the quarterback situation, Joe, that needs to run the ball. And that's why your point about Foster is absolutely right, because they were going to have to run the ball as the foundation of their offense. So the question is, can they still do that? You know, Alfred Blue, as you know very well, in that start last year in Cleveland, which was also Ryan Mallett's first start, Blue had 36 carries for 156 yards. Now, he's not doing that every week. We know that. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're going to have to play with an offense where the run is the clear driving force. And I don't know if any of the backs that they have, Blue or Polk, is capable of being sort of a bell cow back, so they might have to rotate. But I think both those guys sort of fit the profile of being able to run inside.
Do you remember Jonathan Grimes when he played a couple years ago, Greg? He had a big game in Week 17. Is there any skills that he can offer?
I don't remember him. I remember he had that game. I don't remember him really well. He's not, and you tell me, because he's not as big, I don't believe.
No,
but I could be wrong.
Yeah, he's got really nice measurables, though. He's a good athlete based on the numbers. I think he's somebody who's going to be interesting to watch in the preseason, if only because Alfred Blue, 3.1 yards a carry last year. Chris Polk is always hurt, although he's made plays in the past with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
This is a team. I think, Greg, they're going to be groping in the preseason, and they're going to be just begging for one of these guys to step up.
It'll be a competition, which is what preseason is for a lot of teams, a lot of positions. It'll be a competition because Foster, like you said, I mean, he's being talked about being out for 8 weeks. So they're going to play a good chunk of the season without him. So this is an important competition for Houston.
We now actually, Greg, one more question with the Texans. I know in the past you've kind of wavered a little bit on DeAndre Hopkins. This is a guy who was putting up numbers, but maybe wasn't as explosive on tape as you might think. However, you would have to think that Hopkins is going to get an absolutely monster share of the targets with Foster out and Andre Johnson gone. Do you think he's ready to take that next step?
That's a great question. I mean, he put up big numbers last year. I don't know if in this offense with either Hoyer or Mallett, if anybody's catching 100 balls. So I don't know if his numbers are going to be appreciably better, and they were very good last year. They've got some interesting wideouts here because Cecil Shorts at times has looked like a quality number two type. I've always thought Nate Washington was a very solid pro type receiver. And again, he's not a guy who's going to catch 80 or 100 balls. No one is on this team. But they're fairly deep. And, of course, they drafted Jalen Strong in the third round, which is about where I thought he should have gone. So I think with the quarterback situation, it's hard to get a feel right now, Joe, as to how the receiver situation is going to play out.
Switch over to the Indianapolis Colts, Greg. I'm going to ask you a philosophical question here. We can make it specifically about the Colts, but I just want to ask it in general. They spent their first round pick on Philip Dorsett, and reports in the last week or two have come out saying that they've been very aggressively trying to re-sign T.Y. Hilton. Hilton thinks it's going to get done. He wants to be a Colt. And in general, does it make sense for a team to have basically both T.Y. Hilton and Philip Dorsett based on their skill sets?
I mean, there's no one answer to that, Joe. You know, look, the other receiver is going to be Dante Moncrief when all's said and done. I mean, assuming they sign T.Y. Hilton and Dorsett turns out to be the player they anticipate having drafted him number one, their three top wideouts will be Dorsett, Hilton, and Moncrief. And Moncrief 6'2", 225. So, you know, I think, yeah, I don't see for that given team with that quarterback, I don't see that as a problem at all. Does everybody like big and fast as opposed to small and fast? Sure. But I don't think that it's a philosophical or conceptual problem, particularly when you have Andrew Luck as your quarterback.
And the reason I ask that is because Dorsett's been getting a lot of buzz early in camp saying, man, this kid looks like the real deal. He's very cheap in drafts. You can get him in the last – he's essentially kind of a handcuff to Hilton in ways, especially if you're playing best ball. You can go out and get Philip Dorsett for really cheap. I've added him a couple.
And who knows how many snaps he'll play this year because they have Andre Johnson. And, you know, we don't know. You assume their top four receivers are Johnson, Moncrief, Hilton, and Dorsett. That's what you would assume, correct?
Absolutely.
So Dorsett, being a rookie, is theoretically the odd man out. He'll get on the field, but when you say he's cheap, I don't think anybody's looking at Philip Dorsett as playing 50 snaps every week. You don't think he's going to do that, do you?
No, absolutely not. But that's why I said in best ball formats, Greg, which are essentially you don't pick out a lineup. It just, if a guy has a big game, it essentially puts him in a lineup for you. That's why I think he's a nice player to have in that format. Because
I agree. Because given the quarterback and the fact that Luck is a willing, you know, he's willing to turn a loose, as we know, down the field. I think the best case for a guy like Dorsett, particularly when you're talking fantasy, is maybe he catches 32 balls and 7 touchdowns. You know, I think that's what you're kind of hoping for. He's not going to catch 75 balls.
Let's slide over to the Jacksonville Jaguars, Greg. We discussed this with Johnny Manziel. We discussed it with Jimmy Garoppolo. There's going to be plenty of time over the course of the preseason. I'm sure you and John Hansen are going to talk a lot about Blake Bortles. And we know that he regressed towards the end of last year. But we're going to have to see him on film before we're sure that he's progressing correctly. But I want to ask about the receiver position, because one guy who is basically busted through the ceiling, who is being completely hyped up, is Allen Robinson, who had a very, very good half of the season last year. And it looks like for now he and Allen Hurns are going to be the starting receivers for the Jaguars, with Marquise Lee sidelined with a hamstring injury. What kind of pairing is Robinson and Hurns? And I'm particularly interested in Hurns because he is significantly cheaper in drafts than is Robinson.
Yeah, And I think Hearns is more of the vertical threat. You know, I think he's the straight line guy, whereas Robinson, to me, is more of the, to use the old term, the possession guy. He's really strong. He's really good after the catch. You know, so I think Robinson is that sort of safety net receiver. He's a guy that I think as a quarterback, when you develop that rapport with, and ideally they go through camp and Bortles and Robinson develop that rapport, where Bortles feels real comfortable throwing Allen Robinson the ball in critical situations, third down situations. So Robinson, I think, will become that guy. Hearns is a little more straight line. The guy I'm real anxious to see, and again, training camp's always hard, and even preseason's hard, Joe, but I'm really anxious to see what Rashad Green from Florida State does, because I thought just as a pure receiver that he was really, really good. Now, he's only 5'10", 182 pounds, and again, he's not a true burner. Like, he's not like Dorsett or T.Y. Hilton, so therefore he's not quite that guy. But I thought he was a really smooth receiver with a very good understanding of route running, and we'll see how he fits.
And yeah, let's just make it clear. He's going to have a shot to play here because Cecil Shorts is gone. There's targets to replace there. And Marquise Lee, it is evident at this point, he is going to have to earn his role back. If he earns it at all. So Marquise Lee is not going to be thrown right into the lineup.
No. And with Marcus Lee, we know he's skilled, but there's an availability issue. He hasn't really shown himself to be that available.
Okay, Greg, let's slide to the Tennessee Titans and another team that not a whole lot's going on. However, the big buzz has been Marcus Mariota has yet to throw an interception in training camp. Do you trust that? Do you buy into it? Does it mean anything with regards to a guy like Marcus Mariota, especially in comparison to Jameis Winston, who was apparently picked off 5 times yesterday? Does that matter at all?
Well, again, you know, those are always hard questions because you're not there, or I'm not there anyway, and you don't know the situations, you don't know what he's being asked, you don't know how he's being coached right now. So obviously it's a positive because you certainly don't want your quarterback to throw picks, but I don't know what the environment is to really say whether that's automatically means something great or whether it's just nice that he hasn't thrown an interception. But we know he's going to be their starting quarterback. I'm real anxious to see what their offense is when, and we may not know that till week one, you know, the preseason, teams with increasing years going by, Joe, teams do less and less in the preseason games. So it's really hard to get a feel. But, you know, as I've discussed with John before, they drafted a fullback in the 4th round. So right. I'm real anxious to see what their offense is going to be. You don't draft a fullback in the 4th round to say, oh, we're never going to have a fullback on the field.
Yeah, so they're going to run the ball.
I think they're going to mix and match, you know, what Mariota did in college, but then also with a more quote-unquote pro-style two-back offense.
Switching over to the AFC West and the Denver Broncos, Greg, a big concern fantasy players have had. I've actually gotten multiple questions about this. It's because Emmanuel Sanders is a very early draft pick, which you would assume would happen because he caught 100 balls last year. A lot of concern about the production of the Z in the Kubiak offense. Is it the scheme, Greg, or is it the lack of talent that Kubiak has had both at the Z and at the quarterback position that's limited the production of that position?
Well, I think when he was with Houston, they did not have a wideout opposite Andre Johnson that you felt really good about. If you go back, and I can't remember all the names, but they did not have a big-time wideout opposite. So that's, look, I don't think it's a function of system. I don't think any system, and Kubiak's system has been very effective in the NFL. No system willingly says, oh, there's a position we don't care about. We don't need that guy to be effective or a factor. So I don't think that holds water as a philosophical statement. Again, I think this offense now will be different in Denver from what we've seen. I think Peyton will be under center more. I think you'll see a lot more play action. You know, I don't think you'll see him in the gun as much. I let's put it this way. I think this will be more Kubiak's offense than Peyton's offense.
And I think people are kind of trying to find that balance point because now Kubiak's been great for fantasy. You know the X is going to get a ton of targets. You know that Kubiak, and he actually said it this week, he prefers to have a one-back system. He wants that bell cow. But people are a little bit concerned about Sanders. They're wondering if who the tight end's going to be. So this is something maybe we're going to have to wait into the preseason to see what's going on with Kubiak. But I am very intrigued to watch the Broncos. Greg, the Kansas City Chiefs, a guy who is getting hyped up in camp, and you were on early last year. As a matter of fact, I didn't even hear of the guy until you mentioned him, I believe, last preseason, was Albert Wilson. He's been
Yeah, I watched him in college. He went to, I think it was Georgia State, if memory serves correct, a school that didn't win a game. I think it was Georgia State, but I hope I'm not being incorrect here. And I thought, watching Albert Wilson in college, that he was a lowercase Brandon Cooks.
And he did go to Georgia State,
Okay, and I believe they didn't win a game his senior year. But I think that's the way I saw him. Later last season, you know, it's funny. I noticed him last year in the preseason, okay? It's funny how you watch preseason tape and you notice certain things. And when I say I noticed him, it wasn't because he was catching a ton of balls. I noticed the way he blocked, okay? And that always is interesting to me. I watch this guy go after people and lay people out in preseason at the wide receiver position. And I actually remember specifically saying to Ron Jaworski in the preseason, watch this guy, Albert Wilson. I said, I have no idea what's going to happen with him, but this guy just impressed me as an overall player. And then as the season progressed, they got him on the field. I remember him catching a 48-yard post route later in the season. I forget who it was against. I think he could, like I said, I think he could be their version of Brandon Cooks. He's not quite that guy, but he's not far off.
Does that all matter with Alex Smith at quarterback, though? Now, Brandon Cooks' comparison is interesting to me because you think of Cooks as a guy who could do things closer to the line of scrimmage. And in theory, that would benefit Alex Smith, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, look, Alex Smith is he's we know what he is and what he isn't, but he's got more positives than negatives. He's not a great deep ball thrower. He doesn't drive it down the field. You know, for any number of reasons, it might not be in his DNA. He doesn't have the big arm. A lot of his deep balls tend to lose energy on the back end. But he also is a consistent player. He doesn't turn it over very often. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would be – here's what people remember, that a wide receiver didn't catch a touchdown last year. And I know for fantasy that's a killer. But he's also, in his two seasons in Kansas City, Joe, thrown 41 touchdowns and only 13 interceptions. So we're not dealing with, you know, a bottom-rung quarterback. We're just dealing with a quarterback that doesn't provide every dimension.
And maybe the lack of receiver has kind of
exacerbated. I mean, they now have Jeremy Maclin. Apparently, they've made DeAnthony Thomas a full-time receiver, and we don't know how that'll play out. But, you know, and now if Albert Wilson can be a factor, they drafted Chris Connolly in the third round, another big kid who can run. Receivers are always tough to gauge as rookies, but Connolly is 6'2", 215, and can run. So they're better at wide receiver, or let's put it this way, they have more explosive elements at wide receiver this year than they clearly had last year.
Switching over to the Oakland Raiders, Greg, Vic Tafer, great beat writer, covers the Raiders. He said Latavius Murray has essentially taken every first-team rep at running back. That would seem to suggest to me that the Raiders are counting on him to be their bell cow. He looks like the guy. Based on what you saw on tape last year, do you have faith that Latavius Murray can be that type of running back in the NFL?
Tough question, because I think that he's a big kid who's a little upright. Now, there have been upright runners. You could argue DeMarco Murray ran upright. You could argue, you know, people for years said that about Adrian Peterson. So it's a case-by-case thing. I remember watching Murray at Central Florida, and, you know, he's a very quick kid with speed for – I mean, he's big. He's like 6'3", 225.
Huge.
I met him actually at the Super Bowl this past year, and I talked to him for quite a bit. And, you know, he struck me as a kid who's really ready for the challenge. Now, again, he's got a stride. He's big. There's some physicality to him. He certainly was the bell cow in college. Now, that's college football, not the NFL. But when you look at the skill set and with what they have in the backfield, you pretty much say, hey, he's the guy. I mean, they don't have another guy that they could possibly say he's the guy. So it's going to be Murray.
Just one thing to point out for people listening. Apparently, Michael Crabtree is having a nice camp so far. We've talked about Michael Crabtree.
He's a good receiver, Joe. You know, he's a good receiver. I mean, you have to understand what he is. I mean, he was a top 10 pick, so people automatically assume he should be a superstar, and I don't think he's really that guy. But, you know, I think, let's put it this way. Couldn't you make an argument that guys like Allen Robinson and Michael Crabtree have similar type skill sets at their best?
Absolutely. I almost wonder if, do you think Amari Cooper might be kind of a more explosive version of Crabtree? I don't think you look at Cooper as a guy who's going to be running down the field in a straight line like a Martavis Bryant. And
No. I think Cooper's got a little more – Cooper's got more juice than Crabtree. But Crabtree is a big, physical, tough, aggressive wideout. And the San Francisco thing, whatever happened, I mean, obviously there were issues with their entire pass offense. He was hurt a little bit. But I think Michael Crabtree, in a good situation, and obviously this team has no questions at quarterback, I think he can become a real quality sort of short to intermediate underneath type receiver who moves the chains.
And this is a potentially interesting offense. I'm really interested to see what Derek
with you.
Carr does. Derek Carr, like obviously, Greg, before we move on, this was a guy who acquitted himself well, I think, on tape, but the numbers were not there. And eventually in fantasy, we need the numbers to be there. But now he's got some weapons around him, and I think it makes him a little bit more interesting this year.
Yeah, and I think the big question that I'll be looking at with Derek Carr is to see if he turns it loose a little more. And again, as a rookie, you're okay with him checking it down and not turning it over, particularly on a team that wasn't very good. And I think this team will be better, but still, obviously, you don't want him to turn it over. But there's a fine line. When throws are there, you've got to make them. And that's what I'll be looking for with Derek Carr.
Greg, San Diego Chargers. One of the big stories that's come out from this offseason, and a guy who I respect a lot, Kevin Acey of the Union Tribune San Diego, yep, who covers the Chargers, he's been insistent that Keenan Allen in the past has had effort and drive issues. And I know you can't get into a player's head when you're watching tape, but
is that something that
you can see on tape if a guy is essentially dogging it a little bit?
Only if it's blatant. I mean, if it's not blatant, Joe, you can't. That's a hard question, you know. And again, if I'm watching Chargers tape, I'm not necessarily just studying Keenan Allen on every play, so I can't speak to that. He's there, so I would take him at his word and at face value. And if that's true, that's a real problem, because I think it's really hard if guys have that in sort of built into their DNA. It's hard not to be that way. You know, if you have to tell yourself to concentrate and play hard, and again, I'm not suggesting this is or isn't true because I don't know, then that's an issue.
Just one more point. Phillip Rivers has been really insistent that Keenan Allen, number one, has had a great camp. So AC has also said Allen looks past his issues that he's had in the past. Number two,
and that could be true.
Phillip Rivers has talked him up, and Phillip Rivers has also talked up Stevie Johnson. And he was an overlooked player for months in the fantasy community. And then people, I think, clicked, Greg, and realized, oh, wait, Eddie Royal caught like 70 passes in this offense last year. There is room for Stevie Johnson to contribute.
And because of the quarterback, I think Stevie Johnson catches balls. You know, that's the thing. When you have a quarterback like Rivers, he gets the ball to the right guy. So a guy like Stevie Johnson, whether he ends up starting or being a third receiver, look, Malcolm Floyd, who I think is very talented, he seems to not play 16 games, you know, every season. So, you know, you could see Stevie Johnson being a big factor in this offense. And say what you want about Stevie Johnson. He's a good route runner. He understands how to get into voids. He understands how to work against man. He's a professional receiver. And I think when you have a professional quarterback like Rivers throwing to a guy like Stevie Johnson, like you said, he could be very undervalued in fantasy, but he could have a pretty good season.
Reminder before we switch over to the NFC that you are listening to the FantasyGuru.com podcast. We are titling this aptly preseason podcast number one. There will be more to come in the future once there's a preseason games to digest. This is just a little bit of a wrap up of the latest news from training camp before we get into those preseason games. I am FantasyGuru.com managing editor Joe Dolan with NFL Films' Greg Cosell, who is doing, as always, a phenomenal job leading us around the league. Greg, we're going to switch to the NFC. Not a ton going on in Dallas, which I guess is a good thing, because of injuries to Lance Dunbar and Darren McFadden. it is clear that it is Joseph Randle's job to lose in this backfield. I would think he would have to fall on his face in the preseason to lose it. But
How do you see that, Joe? I mean, you know, they want to be a running team, and they've said that even without Murray, they're going to run. But there's no way Joseph Randle's carrying the ball 350 times, not in my opinion anyway.
Now, Greg, you can still be a really good fantasy back. Lamar Miller proved this last year if you're carrying 220 times.
Right, right. I'm talking, I guess, more football here than I am fantasy. I mean, Randle could carry 270 times and gain 1,200 yards and be a great fantasy back, and that's what you're concerned about. But just talking football, you know, I think it's tough to have that kind of production by committee. You know, I'm not a believer that you can have a committee run the ball and have that kind of real week-to-week, quarter-to-quarter, you know, strength running the football.
And then if that's the case, then, to people listening, there's people out there who want nothing to do with Joseph Randle. There's some who would say, hey, I'll take him in the third round because I believe in the offense and I believe in Randle and the little we saw of him last year, the explosive runs that he had. But you have to take into account, as Greg is saying, this guy is probably not going to top 250 carries. It's just not possible to play that the way that DeMarco Murray played last year consistently. And you need a really special back, and you need good luck to do that as well. And
yeah,
I think Dallas
their offense is going to be different, in my opinion. I know they want to run it, and their O-line says, look, they have a real good O-line. We know that. Mm-hmm. It gets into a larger debate, and we'll throw this out, and people can, you know, form their own opinions, obviously, as to the relationship between a line and a back. Is it a line that makes a great running game, or does a back really make a great running game? Assuming you don't have a crappy, you know, all things being relatively equal. I mean, right. The question ultimately, if you frame it specifically to Dallas, is can anybody run behind that O-line? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, and that Greg is why I want the Cowboys to stay put. I want them to take the status quo into the season because I think this is the perfect case study. Can an offensive line make a running back? And I think this is the one that would answer that question because DeMarco Murray, I think, has been that people are saying away from Dallas, he's not going to run for as many yards. I would agree with that. He's not going to get as many carries. But people have been saying, oh, he was entirely a fabrication of that offensive line. And then you look at his numbers in the past, and DeMarco Murray's always put up numbers when he's been on the field. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see if Joseph Randle can do anywhere close to the similar performance as DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, that's one of the most interesting storylines of this season.
Switching over to the New York Giants, Greg, well, another team, not a ton going on. Eli is apparently having a great camp, which you would anticipate.
Which I'm not surprised by that because the last six games last year, 12 touchdowns, three picks, clearly picked up that offense really well. It's his second year in it. He's a smart player. They've got weapons. I think this offense can be very good.
Greg, does James Jones have anything left? They signed him. What's his best position at this stage?
I think they signed him. Essentially, he would be a fourth guy. So I have no problem with the signing. I mean, look, they're counting on Cruz, Beckham, and Ruben. You know, Ruben Randle, he was a second-round pick, and maybe people thought he'd be an 85, 1,200-yard receiver. And that's okay. I liked Ruben Randle when he came out of LSU, by the way. But I think he ended up with over 70 catches and almost 1,000 yards last year. So we're not talking about a stiff. We're just talking about a guy who's not an elite top-five guy. But they've got three good receivers and one great one. So I think this offense, you know, James Jones was not brought in to play 50 snaps. He was brought in as probably a fourth guy.
Have you been to Eagles camp, Greg, yet?
I have not. I will probably go the week that the Ravens are here practicing leading up to that preseason game.
Well, the reason I ask you is because I saw our friend Ron Jaworski talking about Sam Bradford, and he's been impressed so far with Bradford. And somebody else I know in the organization has said it is so evident watching Bradford throw the ball that the ball just comes out significantly better than it comes out of the hand of Mark Sanchez or Nick Foles. And I mean, I guess this is just going to reiterate all the questions we asked you offseason about Bradford because you still haven't actually seen it yet. But in talking to Ron Jaworski, do you think this is something that has a lot of a high chance of success if Bradford stays on the field.
Yeah, I do, because, you know, what people have to remember is Bradford's Heisman year at Oklahoma, Oklahoma averaged 82 plays a game. He played in a high tempo, fast-paced offense. The only thing he didn't do was run. Now, Bradford, before his knee injuries, was very athletic. He just wasn't a runner. We'll see how that plays out. But Bradford's one of those guys, when you watch him throw, Joe, he's a great thrower. Now, I thought in St. Louis, because of a poor O-line, he got a little cabin fever and a little gun shy. I think this offense, for the most part, in Philly takes care of that because it's quicker. The ball's going to come out. He's not going to have a lot of deep drops where he's going to have to sit in the pocket. But if you just watch Sam Bradford throw, I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys who I respect tremendously at the quarterback position, and I trust my own eyes as well, as you know, when it comes to quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. There may not be five or six or seven better throwers than Sam Bradford. I mean, he's clearly a better thrower than anybody the Eagles have had in the past, a couple of years, or on the roster now. The questions with Bradford surround the other things, not just his ability to throw.
Greg, one thing I really respect you around draft time is you don't really look at mock drafts. You don't have stock
No.
on guys, and you evaluate them based on their skills. And I know a lot of people in the Philadelphia area rolled their eyes heavily when the Eagles made Josh Huff a third-round pick out of Oregon, and they're like, oh, boy, here comes an Oregon guy. However, you, if I recall, liked the
pick a lot. Yeah.
What can Josh Huff give this offense? There's been a ton of camp buzz about Josh Huff.
Well, I think Josh Huff fits. We know he fits Chip Kelly because he played for him at college, but I think that he's a guy who can line up inside. He can line up outside. I think he's a quick twitch kid. I don't think, you know, he's not a 4-3 guy, but I think he's got really good quickness. You know, I always think I relate to what Ike Taylor told me, and I've talked to Ike Taylor a lot about receivers in the NFL, and one of the things he's always told me is it's not 4-4 straight line speed, it's 4-2 speed coming out of a break. And that's, like, for instance, he's told me about, regarding Antonio Brown, that's why Antonio Brown is so great, because he said he's 4-2 coming out of a break. Josh Huff strikes me potentially. And I don't want people to think I'm comparing him to Antonio Brown. I'm just talking about stylistically, Joe.
Right.
I think Josh Huff has that kind of lateral quickness. If he can stay healthy, if he can get enough reps, I really liked Josh Huff when he came out. And I think that if he can become a factor, then I think he provides the Eagles with something they don't really have at any other receiver position.
Switching over to Washington, Greg, one of the most interesting comments from the opening of training camp, NFL Network's Albert Breer was at Washington camp, and he said, hey, look, while Alfred Morris is the starter here, he's got to beat out Matt Jones. If Matt Jones is playing better than him, he's going to get reps. He's going to get carries.
Yeah.
What do you like
another
about
guy? I liked Matt Jones coming out of Florida. It's funny you say that because he was one of the last backs I watched because I was, you know, with two or so weeks before the draft, I kind of start going through guys that I didn't get to because, you know, they're not necessarily viewed as high picks, although Jones
right.
did go in the third round. And then I started watching Matt Jones, and I'm like, wow, this guy, you know, he's a certain kind of back. You know, he's a big kid. Obviously, he's not a, you know, a 4-4 guy, but he was big, physical. He's 230-plus pounds, and I really liked him. And I was not surprised he went where he did, and I saw him as an NFL back. And when you deal with guys who are 230 pounds, they have a chance to be lead backs depending on the offense. I mean, is he a lead back like Marshawn Lynch? No. Or Adrian Peterson? No. But, you know, in some ways, could he be an Eddie Lacy type lead back? Possibly.
I think our guy Lance Zierlein compared him to Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, maybe an uppercase version.
Yeah, I think
and
he's
I
a little
like
better
that.
Than that.
Yeah.
I think he's a little better than that.
To the NFC North we go. Greg, the Chicago Bears, the big news out of camp. Kevin White has shin splints. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network says they're potentially
yep.
serious, could keep him out well into the regular season.
Interesting.
You would think that opens up a spot for Marcus Wilson, but he seems like he's been kind of in the doghouse here recently. And the guy we talked about in San Diego, Stevie Johnson, is replacing Eddie Royal, who now goes to Chicago. He's been another one of my favorite late, cheap picks, Greg, because I feel like Jay Cutler could look for Eddie Royal quite a bit with no Brandon Marshall there and if Kevin White misses time.
Yeah, I mean, look, then it's next man up, and you know, look, let's start at the beginning here, and be just real quick about this. John Fox is going into Chicago with a mandate, and this reminds me of when Foxy became the Panthers coach in 2002, and they made the Super Bowl the next year. And he's going to go in with this approach. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play defense. And again, their defense has a lot of questions, but I'm talking about the philosophical approach. And our quarterback, we're not going to, by the style in which we play and the concepts we employ, we're not going to make the quarterback the driving force of our team. Now, we don't know if that approach can work because, as I said, the defense was bad last year. I think it'll be better this year. I have tremendous respect for Vic Fangio, who's now their D coordinator. But this is not going to be a team, unless score dictates, that looks to throw the ball 35 times a game. That's not going to be their approach, Joe.
Let's go to the Detroit Lions, Greg, as we try to move on quickly here to wrap this up. The Lions website made an interesting comment, and they said, at points, you almost forget that Ameer Abdullah isn't Reggie Bush because he looks very similar than him on the field. He looks like he's playing a similar role. I personally watched a lot of Abdullah before the draft. I loved him. I thought he was the second best back in the draft behind Gurley. Do you view him, though, as the type of back who can lead an offense in touches? And that's the question for fans.
I think he can in an offense where the run is not the foundation, and my guess is that's the way the Lions' offense will be. You know, I think if you want him to carry 240 times a year, he can do that, which is, you know, I don't think he can carry 320, but I don't think Joe Lombardi, the OC, going into his second year, coming from New Orleans, I don't think he views an offense, you know, with a back being a guy who's going to, you know, carry 300 plus times. So I think Abdullah can be the guy that we're talking about, and I really liked him on film too. I thought he was the second best back in the draft as well.
Well, that's fascinating. That makes me feel good, Greg.
We'll see if we're right, Joe, you know?
Yeah, I think for fantasy, though, I'm always looking for more efficiency with running backs at this point. And Abdullah, if he catches 40 passes, I really don't care how many carries he gets because I think he'll produce enough to really come through for fantasy. To the Green Bay Packers, Greg, I think we were waiting for this moment. And the Richard Rodgers hype train has left the station. Aaron Rodgers has been talking him up. Mike McCarthy's been talking him up. In theory, could Richard Rodgers, if he wins the starting tight end job, could he be more important to this offense than Devontae Adams?
Oh, well, that's a relative question, Joe. I don't know what more important means. We know when they had an athletic tight end like JerMichael Finley, how important he was. He didn't necessarily catch 90 balls, but he presented a lot of issues for defenses. Rodgers is an athletic kid. I liked him coming out of Cal. He was a third-round pick. He was more of a movement tight end than a line-of-scrimmage tight end. And I think, yeah, if he can become sort of their new Finley and move around, because he's got that kind of physical ability, that just adds a lot of dimensions. But I really like Devontae Adams, and I think he's just going to continue to improve. You know, they've got a lot of really good receivers, and they throw the ball really well, obviously, with Rodgers. So it's hard to know who's going to get the catches after Nelson and Cobb.
Just a reminder for fantasy players here, Richard Rodgers is free in drafts. I mean, this guy is going in MFL 10 best ball leagues, like, 13th round at the earliest. That's a guy, in my opinion, that you want to add to your fantasy team. He has a part of this kind of offense with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, and you can get him for that cheap all day. I'll take him in that spot because it doesn't hurt you if he doesn't come through. To the Minnesota Vikings, Greg, Adam Kaplan, our guy from ESPN, went to Vikings camp. He called Charles Johnson the real deal, and Johnson has been involved, I mean, not actively, but passively, in a debate in the fantasy community between Johnson and Wallace. And I've seen the arguments on both sides. John Hansen is really heavily on Wallace's side at this point, simply because there's more of a track record with Wallace. But which player, based on skill set, is the better fit for a North Turner offense if, as Adam says, Charles Johnson is the real deal?
Well, let's take that a step further. Which player is a fit for the North Turner offense with Teddy Bridgewater as your quarterback? And I think Charles Johnson is. And I liked him last year. I mean, he's a big physical kid who runs pretty well. I mean, he for most people, he came out of nowhere last year, and he was really an important player. Well, what, over the last five, six, seven games or so, Joe?
Yeah,
I mean, he had some touchdowns. He caught some balls. I like this kid a lot. And I, given that Bridgewater is not a power thrower, not necessarily a deep thrower, but more of a consistent, efficient thrower, I would think I'm not sure what Mike Wallace does numbers-wise in this offense. I think Charles Johnson will catch more balls.
This is a potential playoff team, Greg, if things click. I think if Bridgewater plays the way he played at the end of last year, this is a team that can make the playoffs and make some noise. Really kind of a deep team. I think Mike Zimmer has done a nice job with them.
Oh, I agree. And with Peterson back, you know, I think it plays perfectly into Bridgewater.
Over to the NFC South, the Atlanta Falcons. Just a note, Greg, there's obviously nothing you can say about this. Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman are both sidelined with hamstring issues. That's opened the door for Anton Smith to potentially get more touches, but it's clear that I think the Falcons view him as a bit player. So it's going to be fascinating to see when Freeman and Coleman get back. But Greg, just a brief question on a guy who the Falcons official website has called the best receiver in training camp so far. Not Roddy White, not Julio Jones, not even Justin Hardy, a guy we like coming out of East Carolina. The guy they've said the best in training camp thus far has been Leonard Hankerson. Hank Leonardson. Greg, did you like him coming out of college? What's his skill set? And was he just stuck in a bad situation with Washington?
You know, I didn't love him coming out of college, but he's a big kid. He can run a little bit. You know, I saw him more as a two or a three type with a really good player opposite him. And again, if everybody's healthy, I mean, Julio Jones is a top three or four guy in the league if he's truly healthy with his size and speed. You know, Roddy's probably closer to the end of his career, but he's a competitor and a battler. I liked Justin Hardy coming out of East Carolina as a slot guy. But Hankerson, you know, depending on Roddy White's situation with health, Leonard Hankerson could get snaps. And look, guys do improve as time goes on. It seems like he's sort of been lost in translation for the last couple of years and hasn't really had opportunities due to injuries and other things. But you know, he is a 6'3 kid who can run a little bit.
Great. Carolina Panthers now. One interesting position for fantasy has been the wide receiver position. Now, Kelvin Benjamin, I know he had a nice year statistically last year. A lot of that was in garbage time, which has been a big point of contention for fantasy players. But Devin Funchess, the rookie out of Michigan, he's available much later in fantasy drafts than Kelvin Benjamin. And I was just wondering if you could do a brief compare and contrast of Benjamin and Funchess. Talk about their skill sets and why one or the other might be a bigger help for Cam Newton as we progress in this offense.
Well, I thought Benjamin was a better athlete than Funchess. Funchess to me was athletic for a big guy. Benjamin to me was just a good athlete. You know, I think they in drafting Funchess, to me it made a lot of sense because Cam Newton is not a precision passer in terms of ball placement or ball location. So you're looking for big catching radius guys. So now, on the outside, you have Benjamin at 6'5". You've got Funchess at over 6'4". You have big receivers, which I think makes really good sense with Cam Newton because Cam Newton's now played 4 years and has certainly had his moments and, you know, provides a certain skill set, but he's not a real accurate thrower. And I think you need receivers to help him. Cam doesn't make receivers better. He needs receivers to help him. And I think that was probably the reasoning behind Funchess as a second-round pick.
And that makes him appealing to me kind of later in drafts as a bench receiver. In the event that maybe he produces 70% of what Benjamin does, he's still going at a much lower cost. Greg, you remember your comment months ago about some kid out of Rutgers named Brandon Coleman, big receiver.
Oh, yeah,
with the New
Orleans
Saints. Well, guess what? It's coming into practice because he's impressing in camp. A lot of hype on Brandon Coleman.
In the name of full disclosure, that came from a conversation I had with Marcus Colston. So I'm not taking credit for that, Joe. I'd love to, but it was a conversation I had with Marcus Colston. So I had to figure he knew what he was talking about since he's there.
Well, Greg, is the question I have is, knowing his size and his movement ability as a receiver, despite being, what, 6'6", 230 pounds, is it possible that Brandon Coleman is more Jimmy Graham-ish than Josh Hill?
Yes. And I think that's a great point. And I think that that's what, again, we know what Graham is, and it's always tough to compare players to guys who are, you know, have put up big, big numbers in the league. But I think they would see Coleman as that guy, to fill that role in their offense, to use in similar ways, formationally, personnel package-wise. Now, is Coleman going to line up as a line of scrimmage tight end? Probably not, and that would be, you know, the only difference, because Graham certainly did that. But I think when it comes to the use of Graham as a detached player and a movement player, I think Brandon Coleman will certainly do that.
Greg, moving to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we're going to have plenty of time, once again, to evaluate Jameis Winston as we get game tape on him from the preseason. But there is two interesting nuggets from Buccaneers camp that I want to talk about. Number one, Lovie Smith says Doug Martin is his lead guy. Number one, I think it's strange that a coach would say that at this early stage in camp. Number two, want to talk about an indictment of Charles Sims if that's true. Because Doug Martin wasn't any good last year, and if
confident, you know, saying, he's with the guys every day, so he clearly feels that Martin. You know, let's put it this way: Doug Martin at his best, and whether he's ever at his best again, that's open to debate. But at his best has more sustaining running qualities to his style than Charles Sims does. And I think what ultimately Lovie wants to do, as a lot of defensive head coaches do, is run the ball, go play action, simplify things, play good defense. I think that's ultimately what he wants to do. And if Doug Martin can be healthy and be the guy that they drafted and I guess in his first season for a good stretch of that, then he fits what they want to do more than Charles Sims.
And the second nugget I want to talk about, Greg, Dirk Koetter. It's funny that we were comparing young players to those who are really good. We just talked about Brandon Coleman vis-a-vis Jimmy Graham. Well, Dirk Koetter compares his young tight end, Austin Seferian Jenkins, to Tony Gonzalez, a guy Koetter coached in with the Falcons. Now, knowing that Tony Gonzalez is the greatest tight end to ever play the position, putting that aside, could you see some stylistic similarities between Seferian Jenkins and Tony Gonzalez?
Yeah, and I think that's what they're talking about. Again, you know, it's like we were just talking about Graham and Coleman. Like you said, I don't think Dirk Koetter saying he's Tony Gonzalez. I think he sees a guy that's big, that runs pretty good, that has a wide catching radius. You know, I think he sees traits that in his offense, keep in mind, coaches are thinking about adaptability to their schemes, and he probably sees Seferian Jenkins functioning in his scheme the same way Tony Gonzalez functioned in his scheme. Now, does that mean he's going to make those ridiculously great catches with people hanging over him? We don't know that, but I think he's thinking of adaptability to scheme.
Moving to the NFC West, Greg, and the Arizona Cardinals, big news out of camp yesterday. Michael Floyd needed surgery for broken fingers. He could be out into the regular season. Don't try to slow down the John Brown hype train, because that is coming, and it is coming fast. Greg, just really quickly on John Brown, very impressive on film last year, but is he a guy who could become more than one type of receiver? Or is he somebody who's going to consistently be kind of pigeonholed into that deep threat role?
I don't know about that. I can remember him in my mind's eye right now making some tough catches in the middle of the field on third down. I think this is the year we're going to find out if he can become that guy. And I think last year he showed that that's a possibility. I don't think that's out of the question, Joe. We need more to see, but I don't think that's out of the question at all.
Bruce Arians also commenting, saying, hey, kind of doubled down. Last year, he said the same thing. He still wants Andre Ellington to be the lead guy, wants him at 20 touches. Greg, from what you saw on tape with Andre Ellington last year, understanding that he was basically hurt all of last season, would you say that his poor season in terms of rate stats, was that more injury or volume related? Because he doesn't really project as the type of back who you would want getting 20 touches, but Arian says he still wants him there.
Well, I think, again, you're dealing, just like we spoke about Ameer Abdullah, you're dealing with a guy who, in an offense that ideally is pass first, and I think that's the way Arian sees his offense. And with Palmer, see, again, now you're dealing with the quarterback. If Palmer can play 16 games, I think a guy like Ellington could rush 14 times and get six, you know, receptions, and there's 20 touches, and I think he could do that. When you think 20 touches, I don't think Ellington can carry 20 plus times a week and hit it up inside, but I don't think that's the Bruce Arians offense. So this is all dependent on if Carson Palmer is your quarterback.
Yeah, and that's what makes David Johnson particularly fascinating to me, because, Greg, he was the most unique running back I think I saw on tape this entire offseason, and I thought it was a very interesting fit when the Cardinals drafted him, but I'm almost sort of getting it now, and I'm really intrigued to watch what David Johnson does in the preseason, because there's another guy. If you talk about the Kelvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess cost bridge, it's very similar with Andre Ellington and David Johnson. David Johnson's significantly cheaper than Ellington, and I'm really interested to see if what he does in the preseason. Moving to the Seattle Seahawks, Greg, big news, Russell Wilson signed his extension. And while that doesn't have a ton of fantasy impact for us, the question I want to ask you is, given it was a move they had to make and the fact that they added Jimmy Graham, could you see this offense finally opening up a little bit more for Russell Wilson?
Selectively. I don't think it's going to change conceptually. They've had great success. They still have a great defense. They still have Marshawn Lynch. There's no reason to believe he's declining based on the way he finished last year. So I think you'll see more selective shots taken, but I don't think you're necessarily going to see a wide open type offense, because I think they have, look, they've been in the last two Super Bowls. I think they have a profile and a template that works, Joe. So I think they'll take advantage of Graham, because why would you trade for him if you're not going to? But I don't think you'll see a 360 degree change in how they play offense.
Yeah, I think Graham, for fantasy players, I've been saying I feel like his numbers are going to be more Julius Thomas in Denver than Gronk in New England type numbers. And while that's still very, very good for a tight end, I think it's going to be a little bit more touchdown dependent than you're used to seeing. And he might well score 13 touchdowns, Greg, because they get in the red zone, they're an efficient offense, but I think Jimmy Graham might be more of a 60 catch guy than an 80 catch guy. And I think people have to live with that.
I agree.
Greg, news coming down basically right as we were doing the podcast. Jeff Fisher told Andrew Siciliano of NFL Network that it's unlikely Todd Gurley will play in the preseason. But he added, I don't need to see Gurley in the preseason to know what he can do. And while we've already talked about Gurley a ton, if you want Greg's full thoughts, you can go listen to the pre- and post-draft podcast. I think he was my favorite back in this draft. I think he's going to play a ton this year, given that he's on the active roster. But it's tough to ignore Trey Mason because he's so good as well. And I still feel like this is a situation we're going to be going into like week three and week four, not really knowing what's happening. But eventually, Greg, when you have talent like Gurley, he becomes the lead back. And I anticipate we will see Gurley getting 15 to 18 carries a game at some point this season.
Yeah, and you hit on a good point. With Trey Mason, I don't think there's a need to rush Gurley in terms of number of carries. I'm not talking about getting him on the field. He'll be on the field when he's ready, because that's what, you know, professional teams do in all sports. If a guy's ready to play, he plays. So they're not going to keep him out if he's healthy. But I think they don't need to give him, you know, 25, 28 carries. Trey Mason acquitted himself really well last year. I thought he was the best back coming out the year before. So I think they're really in good shape at the running back position. And we know how they're going to play, Joe. They're going to run them. You know, this is a team, it's the Jeff Fisher approach. You know, their defense is good. You know, their front seven is really good. Their safeties played phenomenally last year. They're going to run the ball, play really good defense, and develop that physical style. That's Jeff Fisher.
Just really quickly, Greg, before we wrap this up, Stedman Bailey was a player who made some impact, fantasy impact down the stretch last year. He's another guy going really, really late in fantasy drafts who you can essentially add for free. What did you like about his game last year?
I think he's a really smooth route runner, intermediate type route runner. I think he's got really good in and out of break quickness. He's one of those kinds of guys. I think he'll be effective in this offense. They've got a pretty deep core of receivers. People don't think about it because they've had quarterback issues and because they're not a pure passing team. But you talk about Britt, Austin, Quick, Bailey, Chris Givens. I mean, they go pretty deep with guys who can line up and play and have played.
All right, Greg, as we alluded to at the top of the show, we're going to finish with the San Francisco 49ers. There's no way for us to really discuss Aldon Smith until all the details come out. However, NBC Bay Area is reporting that Aldon was arrested this week after getting into an argument with a neighbor and hitting her car. Just another notch on one of the worst off seasons I've ever seen an NFL team have. And a large part of that, not the fault of the 49ers themselves, but nonetheless, this is a team that's trending downward. However, Greg, we've heard a lot about Colin Kaepernick, how he's rebuilt his delivery. He's trying to tighten it up, get more accurate, get quicker in terms of releasing the ball with better touch. My question to you is, you've studied quarterbacks for a long time. Do these delivery reworks ever come to pass, or do guys just all revert back to what they essentially learned, how they learned to throw in the first place?
I've come to the conclusion after years of doing this, Joe, that you can't change the way a guy throws the ball. You can change footwork. There's certain things you can change. I don't think you can change the way a guy truly throws the ball from the time he starts to bring it back in his arm. So, no, I'm not a believer in that. I guess we'll find out. I don't see that happening.
All right, Greg, we've already gone over our allotted slot here. We've had a lot to talk about, but I want to thank you for doing this with us. Note to the people, this is preseason podcast number one at fantasyguru.com. There's more to come with Greg in the very near future once we have actual preseason games to evaluate. Greg, it's coming up very soon. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Joe, really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you indeed. Please, everybody, subscribe to fantasyguru.com. You get the podcast, you get more tools, news, all that stuff. But I'm signing off right now. We'll hear from Greg very shortly. For Greg Cosell, I am Joe Dolan. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.